Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is the show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions even about other shows. You can listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've launched a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which is also on iHeartRadio. There I explain my worldview and what I've learned about the mysteries of life in short weekly podcasts. I hope you'll join me there. Our show today is on soulmates, and our guest is Kevin Tedeschi, Executive Director and CEO of Atlantic University and Edgar Cayce's Association for Research and Enlightenment, which is often known as ARE, where he manages the day-to-day operations of the Edgar Cayce organizations. As both a student and teacher of the Cayce material for some 35 years, he's lectured on five continents to thousands of individuals. Mr. Tedeschi is a nationally recognized resource on the interpretation of dreams, teaching students nationwide the art of dream interpretation. A prolific writer, he is the author of more than 25 books, including Edgar Cayce on the Akashic Records, Edgar Cayce on Auras and Colors, which he co-authored, and his most recent book, Contemporary Cayce, an overview of the Cayce material in easy-to-understand language, which he co-authored with Henry Reed. But most importantly for us today, Mr. Tedeschi also wrote Edgar Cayce on Soulmates. Kevin Tedeschi, welcome to the show, Kevin.
Hey, thanks for having me on the program.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. Now, you know, the best way to start out would be to remind some of our listeners exactly who Edgar Cayce was and why he was so amazing.
Absolutely. Edgar Cayce has been called the most documented psychic of all time. He didn't intend to be a psychic. He actually started out as a salesman selling greeting cards, stationery, and insurance. And then somewhere around the year 1900, he developed laryngitis. And if you have laryngitis and you're a salesman, pretty soon you're out of a job. And he had gone to a number of doctors to try to help him with his laryngitis, and it wouldn't clear up. So as the days turned into weeks and the weeks into months, and no doctor was able to help him, he decided that maybe he could become a photographer because much talking wasn't involved. And eventually he became an award-winning photographer. About that time, hypnosis shows were making around the country, and he went to a program in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and apparently one of his friends volunteered him to be one of the individuals that got up on stage with a hypnotist. And while under hypnosis, Edgar Cayce spoke normally, which was a surprise to everyone because they'd gotten used to his being having laryngitis. So later on, another hypnotist hypnotized Edgar Cayce and had the unique idea to ask Edgar Cayce what was wrong with him and how he could get well. And Cayce answered that question in a normal voice while asleep. That happened in 1901, and we consider that the first reading. Edgar Cayce followed the instructions. He was able to speak normally for the first time in almost a year, and he was ready to go on about his life. Well, the doctor who had witnessed this had another idea and thought, you know what? If Edgar Cayce can do this for himself, maybe he can do it for other people. So he put Edgar Cayce to sleep again and gave him the name and address of some of his patients. And time again, Edgar Cayce was able to tune into the person, describe what was wrong with them, even down to details like temperature and blood pressure, describe how they got sick, outline a regimen of treatment, sometimes even recommend additional doctors they could see that he had no conscious knowledge of. And eventually this doctor wrote an article for the Boston Medical Society, which was picked up by the New York Times in October 1910. And the New York Times published a full-time page spread about the farmer boy who became a doctor when hypnotized. The headline read, "Illiterate Man Becomes Doctor Under Hypnosis." He wasn't illiterate, but it made for a better headline. And eventually, Casey started giving readings full-time, and it was found that he could put himself to sleep, be given the name and address of an individual anywhere, tune into that person, and accurately describe their condition. And for 43 years of his life, he gave readings mostly related to health, but eventually other topics creeped in, like reincarnation, the soul's journey, the purpose of life, how to heal our relationships, virtually any topic you can imagine. In fact, during the 43 years he gave readings, Casey mentioned an astonishing 10,000 different topics. And he founded this organization in 1931 to really explore and document his information. And ever since then, our job here in Virginia Beach has been to disseminate the information from the Casey files that is helpful to people even to this day. And in fact, the Casey information has been so helpful, more than 300 books have been written about Edgar Casey's, and today there are Edgar Casey centers in 35 countries.
Yeah, he was an amazing person. He was extremely well known worldwide. I remember my parents talking about him many years ago. For some reason, he's not as well known, but I mean, I think everybody on the planet had his name on the tip of their tongue 50, 60 years ago.
Well, during the 60s, there was a line of paperbacks called, basically published by Warner Publishing. They were called the Edgar Casey On books that were very popular. And then in 1967, Jess Stern published a book called The Sleeping Prophet, which actually became number one on the New York Times bestselling list. I have to say that is not my favorite biography about Casey, but it sold over a million copies and definitely brought a lot of people to this work.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about Soulmates. Most people, very interesting book that you wrote, Edgar Casey on Soulmates. And most people have a concept of a soulmate as this ideal romantic partner. But that really isn't the situation as far as Casey was concerned. Tell us how Casey described a soulmate.
Well, Casey would say that a soulmate relationship is really an ongoing connection with another individual that we pick up again and again in various times and places, and that we actually have more than one soulmate. We have many soulmates. And in fact, these people come to us in the form of life partners. They come to us in the form of children, sometimes our children. They come to us in the form of neighbors. They come to us in the form of people at work. And essentially, a true soulmate relationship is someone with whom we have an emotional connection. And it can be positive and it can be negative. And the purpose of being drawn back together with this person is that by being around this person, somehow we have an impetus to become whole within ourselves. And that's really the piece of the soulmate relationship that has been popularized by myths and other stories, that somehow there's a person out there that I can be with and become whole. And Casey's premise is it's not that another person helps you become whole by being with them, but instead, by being around that person, you are prompted to become whole within yourself by drawing upon resources you didn't know you had, or by having to deal with issues and situations that are challenging to you, or perhaps in a positive way that this person helps bring out the very best that's within you. So we have very many soulmates, and we do have soulmate relationships in terms of life partnerships, but we have more than one soulmate, and ultimately the idea is that this person helps us to become whole within ourselves.
So when you say there's negative, we can have a negative relationship. Talk a little bit about that, because that's not what we think about as soulmates.
Sure. Well, let me tell you just in general, and then I'll tell you a specific story from the Edgar Casey readings.
Okay.
Let's imagine that we have a boss who is really critical of us. Somehow undermines us, somehow always sees the worst possible scenario, and that person is, has been our bane for a long, long time. Casey would say that potentially we're having that experience, perhaps. This is just one example, it does not have to apply to everyone, but let's imagine that one of the issues we have to work on is personal self-esteem. If that's the issue, then what's going to happen is the soul is going to attract to us other souls that we have encountered through space and time who really push our buttons in terms of self-esteem. And the idea is not so that we can become a doormat, but instead so at some point we say to ourselves, wait a minute, I don't have to take this. I'm much better than this. And we learn to speak up for ourselves by being around people who seem to be critical of us. That's how a negative soulmate relationship can work, that somehow we draw to ourselves an individual to help us draw upon resources within us that we didn't know we had. I used to have a job many years ago, 30 years ago. There was someone in the office who absolutely drove me crazy. And when I tell stories about her, I call her Mrs. X. And the thing that I eventually came to understand is that in that office, no one else was driven as crazy by this person as I was. That somehow there was something about this person that really tuned into something I needed to work on. And I eventually came up with the idea, you know, even my own worst enemy has a best friend, and even my best friend has someone who doesn't like them. And why is that? And that is because we perceive in other people things that we either need to work on or things that we have to work with. So that's the idea in general. Let me give you a story from the readings. There was a couple that I call Michael and Susan, who had been dating for 6 years. They were both Catholic. She was very staunch Catholic. He was just go to church maybe twice a year, Christmas, Easter. But they dated for 6 years and they decided to get married. And back then, back in the 30s and 40s, it was not as common to live together. So you really didn't know what it was like to be with this person for any length of time. They got a reading from Edgar Cayce, and Cayce told them that, yes, they should get together. They had things they could learn from each other and could help each other. And he gave them three things to remember. One, that marriage was a 50-50 proposition. In other words, that 50% of the time I have to be willing to give in and let the other person have their way. Secondly, that in all relationships that are, you know, destined to last a while, we need to come up with a oneness of purpose. In other words, even when everything else is going wrong, what is the one thing that we can agree upon? And the third thing he told us couple was that they had to beware of selfishness in each of them, because they each had a staunch of selfishness in them. So they got married. As soon as they got married, started living together, they started fighting constantly. In fact, so bad were the arguments that eventually they got another reading. They were upset about things like he felt like being the man of the household, he should be able to tell her who to vote for example, in the elections, and she didn't like that. She felt like that sex was only for having children, and since they weren't ready to have children, there was really no reason to have sex. They argued about religion, they argued about money, everything. So they got a reading. Cayce said he'd give them a couple of lives that would help them tune into what the real issue was about. And according to Cayce, in their most recent past life, before Henry VIII had broken with the Catholic Church, he had been a priest, and she had been a nun in a convent in England, and he had talked her into breaking her vow of celibacy, and she had never forgiven him at one level. And prior to that, in Egypt, apparently at a time when the government assigned you with your partner, she had been assigned to him, and he had rejected her. So they had both rejection and kind of an underlying anger between them, and he encouraged them to work it out. Still, they fought. He was a writer. She encouraged him to go off and do foreign writing assignments because she found that when he was gone, they didn't argue as much. Eventually, he was crippled with a disease that doctors said resembled infantile paralysis and arthritis. He was confined to a wheelchair, only had mobility with his hands so he could write, and she had to take care of him. And it was almost as if the universe came up with a way that they had to be together. And even then, rather than learning from that, he wrote back to Cayce's office and said, you know, that if his wife ever died and someone else asked him to get married, he'd have to say no, because he felt convinced that being a monk was the only way to genuine happiness. Eventually he died and they didn't learn their lesson. So the idea here is that once again, there was the opportunity for this couple to work it out, and they didn't. And so that's a negative experience where people had the opportunity and didn't do it. Obviously, there's very many positive experiences in the readings where people came together and learned what they needed to work on.
So when we say negative, what we're really saying is it's always a positive experience, or the possibility of a positive experience. It may be a difficult situation which is you're solving negative energy problems, but the fact that you're drawn together is a positive, it's a positive thing to deal with for your own growth, spiritual growth.
Absolutely, and the important thing to remember, it's not that I'm drawn towards someone because universe is trying to punish me, but somehow by being with that person, there's something I can learn that can help me in my own path toward wholeness. I think the conceptual challenge is very often with when I'm with my spouse, for example, or my child, or someone at work, I'm much more apt to be able to see what they need to work on and want to tell them what they should be doing rather than turning it around and trying to work on what I need to work on.
Right. Well, let's talk about soul agreements. What's a soul agreement?
I think a soul agreement is the idea that before we come in, we agree that we're going to work on certain things. And, you know, we say, okay, I'm going to work on being more patient in this lifetime, or I'm going to work on being a better communicator, or I'm going to work on being more loving, or I'm going to work on being less impatient, or I'm going to work on being less worried about money, or whatever it might be. And we might have a whole agenda. And then we come in, and actually our higher self sets up the circumstances to enable us to learn those lessons. The challenge is that, you know, free will does not mean we get to establish the curriculum once we're here. It only means that we decide whether or not we're willing to work on a lesson that the soul has chosen as a soul agreement before it came in. So it's not that God or some kind of angelic hierarchy is trying to give us one challenge after another after another. Instead, it's that the soul has chosen ahead of time lessons in personal development that it will enable the soul to become whole. And, you know, that's what really being in all relationships are about, that somehow by being around these people, I can become a better person. On one occasion, somebody who was probably very left-brained asked Edgar Cayce that, you know, the goal of reincarnation and bringing all these people together is, okay, to make people become more whole. Well, how often does that happen? Does it happen more or less than 50% of the time? And Casey's response was, it happens more than 50% of the time because if you looked at the consciousness of the world, in general, it was always growing. That somehow, in spite of how things may appear sometimes, overall consciousness is growing globally.
Yeah, that's interesting. When you read the papers, you wouldn't immediately pick that up, would you?
Well, unless you stop and think, you know, a couple hundred years ago, slavery was considered normal. Child labor would have been normal. Women being undermined by the men would have been seen as normal. And all those things now, I think, have a very different perspective in terms of most individuals in the world.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. If you think about it, you can, you know, you look back into history, you can get a feeling that things are improving.
Absolutely.
Now, when, you know, we have more than one soul agreement, and you can have soul agreements to do multiple things, but we can also have more than one soul agreement to possibly marry somebody. We might have, I don't know how many, a half a dozen. Why would we have so many agreements and so many people out there that we could marry? You'd think you'd pick one and kind of go with it.
Well, let me give an example from the readings. On one occasion, a woman was asking Edgar Cayce about whether or not her fiancé was the man she should marry. Now, we probably can imagine that her fiancé wasn't in the room when she asked that question, but she asked, is the man I'm about to marry the man I should marry? And Casey's response was that he could name 25 individuals that she could marry, and the choice was up to her, and the ultimately marriage would be what she made of it. So basically what happens is that our future is not set in total. What happens is that we create our future one choice, one decision at a time. And depending on how we respond to whatever is next drawn to us, that's what helps to create our life. So our life is not created by the things that happen to us, but instead how we respond to the things that happen to us. So for example, let's imagine there's two people that all at once are laid off by their company. They've been there for a very long time. Now, one person becomes very depressed, very upset, decides it's the company's fault, decides they're going to just live off of welfare for as long as they can, and they become negative and bitter. And the other person laid off had the same amount of time, and the company says to themselves, you know what? I never really liked that job anyway, and this is going to give me the opportunity to pursue something I've always really wanted to do instead. They both had the same experience happen to them, but the way they respond to that experience helps to create the next lesson that's drawn to them, the next outcome that happens to them, how their life next unfolds.
Do we ever get have soul agreements with souls that we didn't have a previous relationship with?
Well, let me answer the question this way. First of all, we have been involved in the soul growth proposition for much longer than most people would imagine. Casey, in fact, would say we've been doing this for millions of years, not necessarily always in the earth, but that it's been an ongoing course in curriculum, an ongoing curriculum in personal development to become whole. So we have been encountered with many, 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 many souls. So that said, it's unlikely that we would come in contact with someone for the very first time. But that said, let's imagine that we have a really, really hard relationship with our father or our mother, and that person really drives us crazy. They really pushed our buttons, and eventually that person passes away, and we never resolve those issues. Well, one day our daughter brings home a fiance that reminds us of our father. And so what the universe does is it might pull in a soul with the very same issues that we need to deal with in another person, because it's the issues that are trying to pull out something in ourselves rather than the individual themselves. Casey would say there's no such thing as karma between people. Instead, there's only karmic memory in relationship to someone, and that it's my own karmic memory I'm trying to work with. So, for example, if you have a spouse or a life partner, you can both go somewhere or have an experience, and later on you're both telling each other what happened, and sometimes our memory is very different, even though we were both at the same place. So what we're constantly dealing with is our own karmic memory, not so much what actually transpired with that other individual. My karmic memory is my own, just as the other person's is their own.
So we don't really have to go, and if we have a bad relationship with somebody, we don't necessarily have to go back to that person to resolve that relationship. We just have to deal with the karma that we picked up in that relationship, and we can do that with that person or with somebody else or totally independently.
Well, this is almost a trick question. So, yes, ultimately what you've said is correct, that the important thing is to learn the lesson that I drew, learn whatever I needed that drew this person to me in the first place. Once I learned that lesson, then I've had a healing. But I can tell you, I've spoken all over the country, and many, many, many times I've had someone come up to me at a break and say something like, well, I was with this person and we finally got divorced and I think we've had a healing. I learned what I needed to learn. But what do I need to do to make sure I never have to come back with this person again? That to me suggests there has not been a healing. And so we can kid ourselves that, you know, there's more to work on. Ultimately, Casey would say that until we encounter every single person with unconditional love, there's more for us to learn.
Are families sometimes brought together as kind of a group of soulmates?
There are. We often come up. In fact, when Casey gave readings, very often he would trace connections with various souls back through space and time. I can give a couple of examples in a minute. But sometimes we're with people who we really, really love and admire. Maybe a grandparent inspires us, encourages us, gives us the unconditional love we had hoped from a parent but didn't get. Maybe a sibling drives us crazy, absolutely crazy. There was one of the stories in the Casey readings, there was this woman named May, who I actually knew years ago. She had been a child and had a sister who she absolutely hated. Absolutely hated. They lived in a small farmhouse. There was six children in the family. They shared a room, and they hated each other so badly that one of them went out to the father's barn and got white paint and drew a line through the center of the bedroom, and they were not allowed to cross the line in the bedroom because this was my side and that was your side, and they rarely spoke. Well, eventually she had a reading, and these two people had been challenged by one another for a very long time, including in their most recent incarnation, when one of them had taken the other person's husband. So we sometimes come into a family with someone that we really don't want to be around, and that's the only way we can work it out, is by being forced to be together. The good news about that story I just told is that eventually, from a lifetime of trying to avoid each other, the older sister eventually got married, her husband died, she never had any children, most of the other family members were deceased, she didn't have a lot of money, And so for the last 3 years of her life, she basically had to live with a sister that she could not stand. And May, the woman that I knew, told me that toward the last 6 months of her life, she would say things like, "I hope we can be sisters again." That somehow there had been a healing, and by the fact of them having been brought together, they actually were able to work on that.
It's interesting. Friends. Can friends be soulmates?
Absolutely. Friends can be soulmates. I have a friend, actually, that I've known for 30 years, and I actually had a kind of a dream about this person, that we had been brothers in California during the gold rush. So I think that definitely we have friends that are soulmates. I'm not sure what's happening, David, but you're kind of breaking up on me.
I'm breaking up a little bit. How's that sound better now?
No, not really.
Well, let's see. Can you hear me at all?
I can hear you, but you've got a lot of graveliness in there.
Okay, hopefully this will come out. This has happened before, normally, and I'm going through very short here. How about non-family groups? Non-family groups get together?
Absolutely. For example, we might have relationships at work that we encounter people who are connected to us in some way that are soulmates. In fact, Edgar Casey and his secretary Gladys were connected. Gladys was his stenographer. His wife, but basically the three people who worked with this organization and kept the material going were Edgar Casey, who gave the readings, his wife Gertrude, who would put him to sleep, give him the suggestion, sit by him and make sure that everything was going well, and his secretary Gladys, who would write down the information. And according to Casey, he and Gladys had been together many, many times before whenever there was a work to do together. Or whether that work had been in Persia when he had established a healing center in the past, or in Egypt when he had worked with spirituality, that Gladys had been there as kind of like a helpmate, and the two of them would make a work happen. So yes, we can have soulmate relationships with people from all over the place, and you know, they can be positive, like they were with Gladys and Edgar Casey, or they can be challenging. It's anybody, a soulmate is ultimately anybody with whom we have a strong emotional connection, positive or negative, a relationship that we pick up over and over and over again.
If we wanted to find a soulmate, how would we do that?
Walk out into the lobby. I mean, I sometimes joke, you can't spit without hitting a soulmate. They're all over the place. So anybody with whom we have an emotional connection is ultimately a soulmate.
Okay. So the soulmate would be basically drawn to us, or we would be drawn to them. So it's kind of an innate thing that just kind of happens to us.
Right. And, you know, sometimes people will ask me the question, like, if I have so many soulmates, why is it that I am still single, or why is it that I have not been able to find a helpful life partner? And there were people who asked Edgar Casey that question. And essentially, his answer was that if that happens, we need to look at two things. One, is there somebody in my life that I could have help and assistance to that really requires my assistance? Someone who, you know, whether it's being a listening ear, helping them out financially if I'm able, being encouraging when no one else has, that very often people who could not find a soulmate were told that the person they were supposed to be working with right then and there was already in their environment. They just had been ignoring the thing they were supposed to be doing. And that by working on that service project, let's say, or being of service to someone else, they would be able to move on to the next step of their lesson. The other indicator sometimes was that sometimes people who really had a desire to do something else. Like, let's say I'm a stenographer or I'm a secretary, and I really want to be doing something more creative. Or I'm in a 9-to-5 job that's like being a rat on the wheel. I absolutely hate it, but I still haven't moved on to doing what my soul really desires. Casey would say that very often the soul is trying to express itself in some way, and I keep denying that ability, and by pushing down that ability, I actually am crippling the universe and crippling them from the Akashic Records, he would say, from drawing to me the ideal job, the ideal situation, even the ideal relationship. That somehow I'm hampering down my own soul desires and needs, and that's what's holding up my relationships.
Is my audio any better?
You're back to normal, yes.
Okay, good. It slips in and out. I'm not sure why. You know, one of the things that when I was reading your book I thought was particularly interesting was Casey's comment on soul groups gathering. And he said, one thing he said was that communism in Russia would be destroyed because there was a number of soul groups who valued democracy who would be born in that country. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, he gave a number of readings on things like that in Russia. He also talked about China. Let me talk about China first and then come back to Russia. In the 20s and 30s, he talked about the fact that eventually China would become essentially the leading economic society, the leading spiritual society. And at the time he gave that reading, that would have been seen as science fiction. But as many of us know today, there was a time when China was essentially building a Manhattan a week during their economic growth. And we have an Edgar Casey Center in China, and the people there tell me that 10 years ago, it was very hard to find any kind of a spiritual activity going on. And now, every weekend, there are literally hundreds of activities, whether it's discussions about various religious groups or some of the more leading edge kind of spiritual philosophers you might see on Oprah. They're all over China, so many hundreds that the Chinese government have been unable to even tamp it down. So something is definitely happening in China, and Edgar Casey saw that. In terms of Russia, and I think what happened is that when people are suppressed for so long, they have to turn inward, and when they turn inward, eventually what happens is they realize their spiritual connection, and that is somehow awakened. In terms of democracy out of Russia, Casey said that ultimately the hope of the world would be out of an alliance between the United States and Russia. And what I read out of that is not some kind of connection between, for example, Trump and Putin, but instead that if you take the ultimate promise that each of these countries has, that in the United States it's freedom, it's liberty, it's independence, it's the ability to make yourself whatever you have the capacity to become. And in Russia, ideally, it's that the state is responsible for those who cannot help themselves. And if you take those two ideals and merge them together, and that became the ideal for the world, we could transform the world. But somehow, yes, individuals should be able to achieve whatever they can within themselves, but at the same time, Casey would tell us, we are our brothers, our sisters' keeper. So those two things combined could transform this planet.
Yeah, it's amazing how much insight he had so long ago on so many things, and slowly but surely, you see a lot of these things coming true. It's rather fascinating.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about, you know, Casey said that, you know, we're co-creators in this life. Co-creators being, you know, God obviously created us, but we create a lot of our life too. And if that's really the case, there's no such thing as being a victim, is there?
No, but I think it is possible to have the consciousness of a victim, even though ultimately we're not victims. That we create our life, one choice, one decision at a time, just like the example I used of the two people who lose their job. I think that, you know, when we grow up, we have a lot of choices. We can choose where we go to school. We can choose who we date. We can choose where we move. We can choose to some degree, what kind of occupation we take. And each of those choices, what happens is it draws to us another set of probable realities, and then each one of those choices we choose draws to us another set. So it's not that we just have one destined life and we're just kind of going through the motions by rote. It's instead that we co-create our life, one choice, one decision at a time. But in addition to that, Casey would say that we help to co-create global events. And it can be things like, as easy as, if we hear about a problem on the other side of the world, or if we hear about something happening, like, let me give you an example. A relative of mine has constantly been very frustrated about all the upheaval in the Middle East, and the fact that somehow the Middle East just cannot be at peace. And yet, this individual is not speaking to a family member, and has not been speaking to a family member for over 10 years. This person could help transform the world by healing that relationship. And I know that that sounds a little bit crazy, but it's basically a leavening. It's an energetic impulse that if this person works on the peace that they so think they want on the other side of the world in their own life, it creates an energetic impulse that goes out all over the place. So when one individual, he was actually an accountant, a CPA, asked Edgar Cayce, "What can I do to be of greatest service to the world?" His response was daily meditation and prayer. That somehow, if we help create this positive energy in our own environment, and that positive energy combines with other people doing the very same thing, eventually we can transform ourselves and, in fact, transform the world. That's why we're here, to somehow bring divinity into the earth, to somehow bring the Creator into the earth, the Spirit into the earth. And even though I know lots of airy people, I travel all around the world, and very often people will tell me, you know, I've had a really challenging time. I hope this is my last lifetime. But that is not the premise in the Edgar Cayce readings, that somehow we are here to bring Spirit in the earth, and we have to be here until every single soul we know has made it. And that's a very different perception than a lot of people have.
Yeah, and we also choose to be here.
No, we choose to be here, right. And the thing is, if we can imagine the soul is like our hand, the whole soul is like our hand, and each of the little fingers is maybe an aspect of our personality, that if our little pinky right now is the personality we're exhibiting right now in our life, that little pinky is tired of work, it's tired of challenges, it doesn't want to do this, it doesn't want to do that. And so we might say to ourselves, our little pinky might say, we're not going to do that again. But when we basically go back in spirit, leave this body like we might leave an old car and get a new car. We leave this body, our whole soul would say, well, yeah, it was challenging, but it wasn't that bad, because there's a lot more to us than that little pinky that is exhibiting itself right now.
What did Cayce say about divorce?
Well, actually, when I talk about this, this is the part of the lecture most people try to remember. Cayce would say, but there is. I have to say this, among Aori people, there is the misperception that Edgar Cayce would say, you should not get divorced. That is not what he said. He said that when we are in a relationship of any kind, we should try to make it work. That's the first premise. He did say that divorce was okay, and actually divorce was even encouraged on a number of occasions when one of three things was happening. One, when someone was in danger, physically, mentally, or spiritually, by being in a relationship, Cayce recommended divorce. Someone was in danger by being around another person. Absolutely, he recommended divorce. Secondly, if two people had come together at a soul level with the idea that we're going to learn this lesson together, that we're going to help each other learn this lesson, and they had come together and they had learned it, and they could separate as friends, essentially, but they didn't need to be around each other anymore, they could get divorced. In fact, on a number of occasions, Cayce would tell a couple, your usefulness to one another is over. But somehow they had learned what they came in, they agreed to work on together, they learned it, they could come together, and they could depart and not have any animosity between them. Or the third indication was that if two people had come together and agreed to work on the lesson, and one had learned it, but the other refused to, then it was okay to get divorced. So those three things. Well, someone in danger, two people coming together to learn a lesson, and ultimately they had learned it, or two people coming together to learn a lesson, and one had learned it, and one had not. He did recommend divorce.
Okay. You touched on loneliness a little bit, but it's an important subject, and I think a lot of the listeners probably would like to go into a little bit more detail on this. What is loneliness?
I think ultimately loneliness is the feeling of not being fulfilled. Somehow you can only watch so much TV, or you can only go for a walk by yourself so often sometimes before it just is, it's boring, it's, there's no engaging. So there's this feeling of not being fulfilled, and a feeling of wanting more, a feeling of wanting connection, community of some kind. So if someone found themselves lonely, I think the first thing you can ask yourselves, or they should ask themselves, is right now, what could I do to be of service to someone else? And that's going to create community. It's also going to tie into Casey's mandate somehow, that we reach out to the people around us. And whether that service means something like going into a old folks home once a week and playing cards with some of the people there, or volunteering at a kindergarten to help during recess, or going to the library and helping volunteer as a librarian, or finding, we have lots of visitor attractions here in Virginia Beach. We're actually a very popular visitor attraction site, Virginia Beach, Virginia. Going to the Marine Science Museum and being a volunteer there. Find a volunteer opportunity where you can use some of your creative talents to be of service to someone else. That would be one possibility. Another possibility would be to join a social group that ties in and brings together people like yourselves, whether it's a men's club or a women's club or whatever it might be. Find a social network to get with. Another possibility might be to join a church group that you have empathy with, a church or a synagogue or some kind of a spiritual group, and reach out and try to be a volunteer for them in some way. So the first thing would be to be of service, volunteering somehow in a community that can help create connection. And by doing that, I'm not suggesting that you go to a church and that day you find your soulmate. What I'm instead suggesting is you go to church and you free up this introversion piece of yourself that is creating loneliness. You reach out to be of service to someone else, and maybe someone at the church says, you know what, I have a brother or a sister you might be interested in, and that you create an energetic shift that will draw to you other relationships and other community.
So loneliness, it has a purpose, because it's dealing with something within us that we need to bring out and address. Is that what you're saying?
Well, its purpose is to let us know that we need to be doing something else.
Okay.
It's similar to a story I told a minute ago. We do conferences here in Virginia Beach year-round. We also do conferences online. We have study groups, ecumenical study groups throughout the world. And very often during a conference, someone will come to my office and tell me a story like this, that somehow they grew up in a household where their parents were very critical. That they went off and got married and ended up with a husband who's very critical. They had children, and as soon as their children were teenagers, they became very critical. Once the kids were grown, they got a boss, and now they found the boss very critical. And so this person, often a woman, will say, you know, I guess that's just my karma to be surrounded by people who are critical. No, the universe does not draw to us the same thing over and over and over again to punish us. It draws to us the same thing over and over and over again because we have not changed our response to it. And ultimately what is happening in these instances is this person has very low self-esteem, is very critical, so they are creating a thought form that attracts the same kind of people to them until they think differently. So if we find ourselves in the same situation over and over and over again, we need to change our response. I sometimes say in a kind of a short-handed manner, if you want to change your life, change your mind. You cannot keep having the same thoughts and doing the same things and expect anything to change.
Let's talk a little bit in our last few minutes. We're beginning to run out of time. We've got a few more minutes here. About conception and soul attraction. Do potential parents attract their souls?
They do, actually. In fact, Casey gave a lot of readings on preparation for childbirth, how to create an environment that will attract a soul that will be helpful to you and be helpful to this soul. Our moods during whatever uppermost in our mind during conception can have an impact upon the soul that's brought in. Someone who we are very much in love with and wanting to merge with that person and having that be our thoughts and everything during conception has a very different ramification energetically than having an affair with someone and being drunk and then being angry we did it and waking up the next morning and find ourselves pregnant. those are very different energetic things that can attract souls. And according to the readings, only certain souls can be coming on certain waves of attraction. So whatever's highermost in our mind, whatever's going on in our life, whatever we're doing in life, that creates an energetic attraction that attracts a soul. So for example, if your parents often were teachers, very often you'll attract a soul interested in education. Or let's say your parents are very adept at business, you might attract someone who's very interested in the stock market. So it's not so much that the environment we're in creates what we live, it's instead that whatever environment we're creating, we attract souls very much like us, because they want to experience and or they have lessons to experience in those same kinds of environments.
So how about adoptions?
It works the same way. Casey would say, very often he would do, that's a great question, very often he would give readings to souls who had been adopted by their parents, and they had the very same connections in terms of past life connections, lessons that they were working on, being positively enforced sometimes by their adopted parents, having challenges with their adopted parents, that somehow the universe also kicks in and actually brings together the souls that need those kinds of experiences. So I often tell people, you know, it's important to remember, and as hard as this may seem to some of us, we chose our parents. We chose our parents regardless of whether we adopted, for a particular reason. And if we had a really horrendous experience with parents, someone might say, well, why in the world would I choose that? And the answer inevitably is because you chose as a soul to come in and help people with this kind of a problem, and in order to do that, you had to experience yourself.
It's amazing how the law of attraction works. One of your chapters in your book was twin souls. What's that all about?
Well, twin souls, as soon as I start talking about this topic, everyone wants to kind of throw out the soulmate idea and work instead on twin souls. Twin souls are those souls with whom we have such a close connection that is generally only positive, that is souls we've been with before, and that by being with this person, it's almost like bliss, that somehow being around this person, it's all very positive. Now, instead of being always a sexual relationship, very often Casey would tell people that were twin souls in terms of parent and child. For example, Gertrude Casey, who was Edgar Casey's wife, was told that Hugh and Casey, her eldest son, was her twin soul. That somehow they had a very, very close connection, had been together many, many times, and essentially it's a relationship of unconditional love. The Casey readings suggest that Mary, the mother of Jesus, and Jesus were twin souls, and that these two souls had come together again and again and again, and had some very positive experiences helping with transforming the consciousness of the earth. So a twin soul is a relationship that is ultimately just positive, but it's not necessarily sexual. It's just an unconditional love relationship. If you end up with a partner, life partner, who's your twin soul, then I think that's probably ultimately the soulmate relationship that everybody's looking for.
Okay. We probably have time for one more. And Edgar Casey said that there were certain steps for creating a soulmate relationship, and I thought those were really good. Can you talk about those?
I could if I could remember them, yeah.
I will tell you what they are, and you can expand them. One, learn to love and understand yourself was the first thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then establish a spiritual ideal that can serve as a directional beacon. Third one was be the best you know how to be at whatever you happen to be doing, and expect things to change. That's the fourth. Expect things to change so that they can change.
Yeah, thanks for the reminder. Yes. The first one about learning to love yourself, I mean, if you're going to have a relationship of equals with someone, then you have to have, if you're going to have someone who is going to love you, you really have to learn to love yourself. Now, I don't think we're talking about selfishness. Instead, we're talking about understanding that you're a child of God, understanding that God loves each and every one of us equal. God has never judged us. Generally, we judge ourselves. So first off, you really have to cultivate a relationship with yourself. Learn to see yourself positively. Give yourself positive affirmations if you're feeling down or whatever, but really learn to love and understand yourself. The second one, having to do with an ideal, is about creating an ultimate goal as a couple, in terms of, or as a partnership, or as parent and child. Okay, our ultimate goal is that we support one another when times are down, excuse me, or that we somehow become a listening ear when the other one needs a listening ear, or that ultimately our goal is to create an environment that helps each and every one of our children become the best he or she can be. So you need to have a oneness of purpose, which is how Casey described it in the other time I talked about it, that somehow, what are we doing as a couple or in this relationship for the long haul? We need to become the best that we can be. I mean, very often we have a sense of what we should do, but we don't always do that. And I think Casey would encourage us, line upon line, step by step, if we do what we know to do, the next step will be given. And whether it's in our relationship or at home or at work, we need to really try to be more positive. I mean, we can't on the one hand say, you know, I really want to have a positive relationship with my spouse, and then on the other hand, be surfing the internet looking for porn or going out and flirting with people. I mean, there's a disconnect because it creates a different kind of energy, both of those desires. And then the fourth thing is we have to expect things in a relationship to change so that they can. Casey said at one point, you know, do not say, you know, I'll do the best I can, but this person isn't going to change, so it's not going to work, because then it won't. Instead, you do the very best you can, and then energetically you essentially create a vortex that enables the other person to change as well.
Kevin, we have run out of time. You have been an excellent guest, as you always are, and thank you so much for coming to the show today.
Absolutely, Dave. I encourage people to go to edgarcasey.org for more information.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section on my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time, here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes of both the Common Sense Spirituality Show and Aspects of Spirituality on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.